All right, our last case this morning is 2022-159, in re the adoption of HP. Offer the appellant. Mr. Johnson, you're going first.
Yes. Please the court, Your Honor. I am Attorney Jerry Johnson, along with Christine Bollinger, representing the appellant, adoptive couple, Jeff and Nicole P. We're asking this court to address the third district decision in which they found that the birth father status can change after the filing of a petition for adoption. The third district felt and found that the legal standing was initially was a putative father. Afterwards, it became a legal father. The statute does not conform to that. Case law does not conform to that. So we're asking the court to address the fact that at the time of filing, putative father Cajun Woodrock was an unregistered birth father who had not registered.
He was determined to be the father through the paternity testing.
He was determined to have a biological connection. That is correct.
It's called being a father.
Excuse me?
It's called being a father.
Yes. At the time of the hearing, which the putative father had asked for standing to intervene in the adoption, it was stipulated that he was a putative father at that time, that there was a biological finding that he was connected with this child, yes. The trial court found by the fact that he had not registered, his inability to have standing indicated that he was not going to participate. This was based upon a case that this court held back in 2016, Allen County versus Mercer County, which has no bearing regarding this case whatsoever. The Allen County case involved Children's Service versus the probate court, had no bearing with the putative father, had nothing to do with a registry, had no bearing whatsoever other than the residual rights of a mother. This court, in this case, said now that the Supreme Court has changed the entire statute of law for the adoption. And if this case is upheld, it's going to totally change the putative father statutes. It's going to change the entire adoption.
But it doesn't change the putative father and the duty or the scheme to register as a putative father and the 15-day. Okay, the court said doesn't have rights under that because that didn't happen. He did it on the 16th day or whatever, 17th day after the birth. So if you're going to strictly apply that, as the court did here, he doesn't have standing under the putative father statute, but he has something I would consider even, you know, better than that. He's got the declaration through the DNA testing that he is the biological father.
Yes, but there's a bright line to standard that this court has held in the past. HNR, same thing. There was a biological connection with the putative father. He filed after the registration time had expired. In this situation, it was even better. The birth father had everything in his power to make some factors that he wanted to be involved. He could have filed a parentage action. He could have registered. Everything was in his control, and he did nothing. He knew that when the baby was to be born, September the 5th. He knew.
But the baby was born 6 days early.
Correct.
Nobody notified him of that.
August 31st. But he did not reach out to his attorney. He did not reach out to the birth mother. Why did he not take some steps after what he knew was the intended birth date on the matter. He did nothing. He can't answer that question. He can't answer why he did not support the birth mother during her pregnancy, never paid a penny, clear to this day has not provided any support. He cannot answer of why he didn't check the registry himself. There was no testimony other than his own self.
Test what or to check what registry?
The putative father register.
Why he didn't register as a putative father?
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes. Why didn't he check on the internet of why the necessary to putative father registry? He could have done it at any time, but he can't answer why he didn't on his own. What happened, and again, this is self-serving statements from the putative father, that the attorney calls and says, have you registered? No, I haven't registered. And the attorney had to reach out and attempt to do it. And the statute says the birth father is to register. He didn't even take those steps. And so that's why we don't feel that he's taken any steps to protect his rights. And if we're going to have the, each case to be evaluated as to why he didn't and the reason why he didn't, then we have the burden on the trial court. On every single case, it becomes a fact-oriented matter where this court has not held that in the past. It is a bright line. And the court and the trial court must determine at the time of filing that petition of adoption, it must determine jurisdiction, and it must find standing. Who are the parties involved? And by having this direct bright line standard, the court knows, the trial court knows, this court has held if there's a pending matter in domestic, if there's a pending matter in juvenile, the probate court must wait to determine who are the parties.
Isn't this really just a question of the of the plain language of what the statute says? It says that if we look at him as a father, it says father's consent to adoption is only required if, quote, prior to the date the petition was filed, a court determined that he had a parent-child relationship. That didn't happen here, so he can't object based on being a father. And under the putative father registry, he had to file not later than 15 days, so he doesn't qualify under either one to object. I mean, that seems to be the end of the matter.
It's, right.
I'm not sure why we're talking about other things when you have black and white statutes that exclude him.
And that's why we're questioning why we're here. What happened to the third district? I don't know why they got lost in this Allen County versus Mercer. We still don't understand it. But I want to reserve the rest of the time for Mr. Huffman, who represents the birth mother.
Madam Chief Justice, esteemed members of the court, may it please the court, I would like to reserve a couple of minutes of the remaining time for rebuttal. But I think what Justice indicated is exactly where the crux of this lies. I have two points to make based upon where we've been so far. First of all, the statute does say that a putative father is one who's a man, not married, who hasn't adopted the child, and who has not been determined prior to the date of the filing of the petition for adoption to have a parent-child relationship. So, some of the other case laws said once a parent files that petition, and I think that's Pushkar and some of the other PAC and some of the other cases in this lineage, in all of those cases, the parentage complaint was filed first. And subsequent case law has said, we're going to stop the adoption case, the probate court, from going forward because he was first in time and he got his parentage complaint filed, and then any paternity determination will relate back to the date of filing. But that didn't happen in this case. In this case, the petition for adoption was filed, and 2 weeks later, approximately 2 weeks later, a complaint for legal custody was filed, which I don't think is a parentage complaint, although they requested genetic testing, the prayer for relief didn't ask for any parentage determination, and a parentage complaint was filed 2 months later on November 9th. Therefore, no matter which way you, which one you look at, he's late in even filing the case. So even if it, his ultimate paternity determination relates back to one of those two dates, it's still subsequent to the adoption petition. Why is that problematic? It's problematic because we can take it even farther. 2 months, 4 months, 6 months. Take an example of a six-year-old child who's been in a home being raised because perhaps a mother was deceased and father has taken no interest in the child, but when the kid's 6 years old, they want to assimilate that child into their home and make that child a legal part of their family, and someone comes, gets wind of it and files a parentage complaint. Under the third district case, we're supposed to stop right there, let him catch up, let him become a legal father, and disrupt a family that's been in existence for 6 years. That's the danger of this case. This case involves an infant. I understand that, and the timelines are much quicker. And I briefly want to address Justice O'Connor's question. We have not yet had, and although it's been stated by Appellee, a final determination of a parent-child relationship in this case. We stipulated, both parties stipulated, that for purposes of this case, he was a, Caden W. was a putative father. We stipulated that. We also stipulated that there was genetic testing done and that the Logan County Court had put on a judgment entry indicating that a parent-child, or that a genetic link is there. And I think that's why it actually said there's a genetic relationship between Caden W. and this particular child. That's the judgment entry pursuant to 3111-11D that contemplates that. That entry, if you look at it, which is in our appendix, actually contemplates in the second paragraph the subsequent hearing to make the final determination of a parent-child relationship. It actually says if you don't file an objection, you can't challenge the authenticity of it, but all it really is they're saying this is evidence now. Object if you want to challenge the authenticity, so they don't have to invite all these folks down to testify.
And you're saying that process has not yet been completed.
Exactly, because 3111-12F, the next subsection after D, contemplates that subsequent parent-child determination, and 3111-13, the next statute, contemplates that judgment entry making a parent-child relationship. The one that we have in this case merely said there's a genetic tie, but that didn't preclude us from having a subsequent hearing, which has never taken place, to say, here's our evidence of a genetic tie, and we don't think it is.
Well, you don't have that, and the benefit, fact that there was a declaration that the DNA shows that there is a genetic link, and then the notice goes out to the appropriate people, and that gives them an opportunity to object, but of course, there's no reason to object because everybody knows he's the father.
But a parent-child relationship has to be established. But keep in mind, again, the danger of all of this is someone could come in at the last moment, file this for a two-year-old, a six-year-old, or in this case, an infant, months later, and disrupt an adoption plan that was carefully put together. Keep in mind this, Your Honors.
Those aren't our facts here. So I don't want to get a field of the facts that are actually in this case. So a hypothetical two-year-old, six-year-old,
I understand.
Eight-year-old, that's not what you have here.
Correct.
You have someone who was known at the time. I understand his position are the facts are clear, but there seems to be a dispute that perhaps this young man was given improper advice to wait to file or attach, go to the registry and apply until after the child was born.
That may be. But this court has never said ignorance of the law or bad advice is an excuse for not following it. And all of that, no lawyer came and testified and said, yeah, I'm the one who gave him bad advice. So we don't know whether that's true or not. That would open the door for any putative father to say, I got bad advice, I didn't know the rules, and I should have signed within 15 days. I think what's really important to focus on is keep in mind that the putative father holds all the cards in this for 9 months and 15 days. And 9 months, and in this case 3 days, but what could be months before a petition for adoption is filed, He can prevent an adoption plan from going forward. He has sole control of it. There's nothing a putative adoptive parents can do, and there's nothing that a birth mother can do to guarantee that the adoption plan will go forward. They have to sit and wait and see what if he does what he's supposed to do under the statute.
The petition for adoption was filed, you said, 5 days after the birth?
I believe three to five days, yes. I think it was 3 days after.
3 days after the baby's born, they're filing for a petition.
Correct.
The baby's been placed?
Yes.
Okay. Placed with the sanction of the probate court or just a private?
No. This was not an agency adoption, although the agencies have filed an amicus brief in this, but this was not an agency
adoption.
This
is the private placement adoption.
The court, the Van Wert County Court, approved the placement, yes.
Okay. So the baby's placed there. They file 3 days later after its birth, and he has 15 days after the birth to declare himself the putative father. But that's cut off by the placement, is it not?
No, it is not.
I mean, excuse me, by the petition?
No, it is not. The 15 days is the only exception to the rule defining a putative father. Putative father is defined as a man not married who has not been determined prior to the adoption. The only exception to that is, prior to the filing of the adoption.
Okay, they filed the adoption.
But the putative father registry carves that exception and gives him an additional 12 days after that, if it is, in this case, filed 3 days later, mm-hmm. gives him additional protection. If he would have filed that, keep in mind what he can do, the two things he can do, is register with the putative father registry and support her during the pregnancy. If he does that, this adoption isn't going through. Not abandon her during the pregnancy, I believe is how the statute reads.
You think the constant contact with her during the pregnancy, with her father during the pregnancy, until he was told, don't contact us, doesn't you consider that abandonment?
I'm saying we haven't even gotten to that issue because in order for that issue to be raised, he must file with the putative father registry, and he did not. That's how he gets in the door to argue that. And maybe the court would have, but he's got to do both. He's got to not abandon her and register. He only did one of those if what the Chief Justice is saying is true, that he didn't abandon her. But that would be the subject of an evidentiary hearing, which he doesn't have standing to have.
Okay. Apparently, he learned of the birth really too late to register. He learned on the 16th, and the baby was born on the 31st?
Of August, yes.
Okay. And he immediately registered with the putative father registry?
Well, there's no evidence that he did so. He testified that he tried, but we filed with the trial court, a putative father registry certificate indicating that no putative father was registered. And we submitted that to the probate court. So according to the Ohio Putative Father Registry, there was no registration, and there was no evidence at the trial of any documentary evidence indicating he registered.
Okay.
But again, he has another choice. Just file a parentage action anytime during the pregnancy. He's in. He's a legal father, and it cannot go through without a consent. This case is consistent with Pushkar and all the others where this court gave priority to the first-in-time case, which was, in those cases, either a domestic relations custody case or a juvenile court case or a parentage case. That's why those cases got to go first. In this one, it was all filed after. And keep in mind, the parentage complaint 2 months later. These folks, by that time, have invested resources, emotion, time, money, everything into this child, their lives into this child. And they think they're safe, according to Ohio law, because Ohio law says he didn't file a parentage action prior to, which makes him a putative father. And as a putative father, he didn't file with the putative father registry within 15 days. They think they're safe. Now, all of a sudden, 2 years later, they're still involved in protracted litigation, and this concerns not only this couple, but all Ohio birth mothers who have a right to make an adoption plan when they feel that's what's best. This was a 17-year-old girl, and she's trying to plan for her future. She's now in college. This is an adoptive couple who have invested their lives and their emotions into this child for all this time. And all of that is what the carefully constructed statutory structure in Ohio was meant to improve, to take care of. put your train on the track and put it on in the time prescribed during the pregnancy. He controls all the cards and he can stop it. They can't guarantee the adoption's going to go through, but he can guarantee that it won't go through if he files for that putative father registry and doesn't abandon her and files with a parentage action. If he does that, it's over. And that's why the statutes are connected. And that's why all of them will come down if birth father, or if birth fathers are allowed to change their status months, and as in some of the other examples, years down the road, I'm now a legal father, so all of my neglect before statutorily and personally to this child to support doesn't matter anymore. That doesn't matter anymore because I'm now a parentage.
Well, Counselor, do you have any examples of a successful challenge by a father 6 years down the road for
an
adoption?
I don't, but the Third District Court of Appeals decision, if upheld, would allow for that. If we're allowed to change our status, status is determined at the time of the filing of the petition for adoption. That's what the statutes say. That's what the definition of a putative father is. He's either a putative father or a legal father. But to allow him to change later disrupts an adoption plan, and now we have a child, even in this case, who, even if that law is allowed to stand, that parentage action wasn't filed till 2 months later. Then you have to have genetic testing. Then we might find out he's not the putative father or the biological father after the genetic testing. What then? Then we go back to the trial court, start all over, and then suddenly another putative father comes? I do have real life examples. I've had three putative fathers in a case before. So what happens if one says and says, well, if that's not him, then it's me. Now we're going to delay the finalization of an adoption? That's not what the statutory scheme is for. The statutory scheme is for prompt permanent placement, prompt. And we're going to give the biological or the father, we're going to give him all the opportunity to stop this for 9 months and 15 days and 9 months and until whenever the parentage complaint is filed. All he's got to do is get that filed. We can't file a petition for adoption when she's 6 months pregnant. But he can stop this adoption when she's 6 months pregnant. And I think that's what's important. This is the perfect case to go hand in hand with Pushkar and its lineage to say, first in time matters. This is it. This is the case. Because in those cases, you said, if he files first, you got to let him finish his paternity case and become a father at that point. And since he got it filed first, he gets to participate in the adoption case as a legal father. This case is the perfect case to say, and what's good for the goose is good for the gander. So it puts the parent, it gives him an opportunity to go back. Otherwise, we're like a track race. You're asking everybody to get line up on the starting line and start down the road, and when they get right before the finish line, you look at the adoptive parents and the birth parent, or and the birth mother, and say, stop where you are in the race. Because you guys all signed up when you were supposed to by the deadlines, but this guy who didn't sign up according to the deadlines is now ready to enter the race. And he wants to enter this race, so stay right here while he gets in the blocks, runs down the track, and we're even gonna let him pass you and become a legal father. Then we'll start the race again and see who
according
wins.
According to your analysis of the responsibility and the timeline and the race to the courthouse, et cetera, what happens if there's fraud involved? In other words, the father maybe never notified of the pregnancy. The pregnancy is hidden.
This court has consistently ruled that that doesn't matter in these cases. We've had cases where the birth mother lied and said the child died. Didn't have any effect
exactly.
on the case.
Exactly. We had cases where, you know, the birth mother, I don't know who the father is. No identification.
Right. That's all satisfied by the putative father statutes say, we know who's conceived. When you have sexual intercourse, you're presumed to know that the result of that could be the mother becomes pregnant. You're also presumed to know that she can take whatever options are available under the law, to do a guardianship case, to parent the child herself, to do an adoption case. You're presumed to know all that.
So time a couple has sex, the man better go and register at the putative father registry and name the woman and, you know, declare, I'm going to be the father of whatever issue.
If they want to do what the United States Supreme Court said in Lehrer do, which is seize their opportunity to be a parent, yes, they will. But he even had more advance notice. When we talk, there's some suggestions that the birth mother in this case somehow did something wrong. This birth mother promptly told him, upon learning she was pregnant herself, she told him he was pregnant, she told him she was considering an adoption plan or was going to proceed with an adoption plan. She never wavered from that, and it wasn't until late, that was in February, it wasn't until April or so, or I'm sorry, later on in the summer, when she was getting close to the end of the pregnancy, that there was the communication stopped. So he knew all along she was pregnant. It's not like a situation where she lied and never told him, but even in those cases where they do, where they have that fact pattern, he knows, and all he has to do is file a parent. This man knew she was pregnant. All he had to do was file his parentage action. That's what the Lehrer court wants people to do, fathers to do. Step up, seize your opportunity, put your train on the tracks, and demonstrate that you want to take care of this child and be a parent to this child. And that's why the statutes are constructed this way. If not, we're going to be back to the Wild West, where children are going to be taken out of their homes, sometimes months and years afterwards, because of these. He gets to come back and argue later. And in this case, even at a minimum, even
Counsel,
if
you've used your time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Chief Justice O'Connor, Justices, may it please the Court. I'm Elizabeth Mosser, and I represent the appellee, Caden W. We ask you to uphold the decision of the Third District Court of Appeals, acknowledging my client was the father prior to the first adoption hearing, and remanding the case to the Van Wert Probate Court to determine whether his consent is necessary as a father. The proposition of law before the court questions whether a biological father's status as between putative father and father is determined at the time a petition is filed. The answer is no.
Well, how can you say that when the statute says the exact opposite?
You're referring to 3107.06b3, which requires prior to the date of the petition was prior,
that's,
filed.
That seems pretty clear, right? Prior to the date of the petition.
Correct, and that's what appellants are arguing, that my client is precluded from having his judicial ascertainment of paternity matter in this case because it wasn't complete prior to the petition. However, this completely disregards that when considering who is the parent and who has a right to consent, this court has historically enforced that adoption statutes must be construed in favor of the non-consenting parent.
Even when the language of the statute says the exact opposite, we're just supposed to ignore that language because we want to favor one party or the other?
Yes. With regard to the application of the constitutional protections that are offered.
So I can just take a red marker and just strike out that prior to from the statute. It doesn't apply.
Well, in effect, Your Honor, this court has historically enforced that when looking at that statute and looking at the plain language of the statute, you have to construe that strictly in favor of the non-consenting parent.
But construing strictly still can't change the words prior to the day of the filing of the petition. No matter how you can construe it, that only says one thing.
Well, when focusing on the prior to language, what we have to look at is whether that sufficiently meets the requirement.
You think there's a constitutional violation, so we should ignore the statute? Is that your claim?
I think without this court's reading of the statute in prior cases, absolutely there is a constitutional issue. And that's why this court has historically enforced that statute in favor of the non-consenting parent. So we look back at In Re Adoption of Pushcar, this court ruled that even...
That was a little different because there had been... Prior to the adoption petition, there was a pending lawsuit to establish parentage. That's not the case here, right?
Well, if you're looking at the status of the father in that case and the status of the father in this case, the father in Pushkar was at the time of the first hearing, by law, a putative father with a pending...
But he had already filed. I think what the court said was that based on judicial priority rules, that lawsuit had to go forward first. That's not the case here because he hadn't even filed prior to the adoption petition.
That wasn't the rule of law in Pushkar. In Pushkar, there was no specification on when the juvenile court action had to take place. It did not specify that action had to take place first. And in fact, this court specifically since then, in 2018, in re adoption of MGB, has specifically said that jurisdictional rule does not apply between two courts that are each exercising their original exclusive jurisdiction. It cites to Allen County, which was prior to MGBE, and says there's no first-to-file rule. There is no first-to-file rule. Probate courts must refrain when parentage is before a juvenile court, because until that has occurred, the probate court cannot determine whether the father's consent was required. Here, we didn't even need the probate court to refrain from that first hearing. My client had obtained a judicial ascertainment of paternity prior to that first hearing. He stood in court at the first hearing and said, I'm the father, here's my proof. And I object
to this
adoption. But
not before the filing of the petition.
He did not file his judicial action prior to the petition.
So, Counselor, I think Mr. Huffman was saying, if we agree with your position, then couldn't a biological father come in any time, 2 months down the road, 10 months down the road, 2 years down the road? What's to prevent something like that from happening?
Well, first of all, I think the issue of why are they coming forward at that point in time? Is this really a likely scenario? There's a lot of scary hypotheticals like that.
Sure.
But frankly, when we're looking at, you know, what happened here, we can go all the way back and look at the difference between Lair v. Robertson and Caban v. Muhammad, where we essentially had two guys kind of in the same status at the same time. But the U.S. Supreme Court looked at what happened in Caban v. Muhammad that secured that guy's right to parent. It was that he was acting as a parent, that he was reaching out and he was grasping the responsibilities of being a parent. Whereas in Lair v. Robinson, he was found not to have done that, to have delayed. So again, when you look at the statute, apply that to the facts, construing it in favor of the non-consenting parent, we get back to the fact that we have to have this protection of constitutional rights to parent your own children.
Okay, so in this scenario, you have the father who knew even before the child was being born that he's going to be a father. Isn't that a scenario that's different from a scenario where the father does not know the woman is pregnant or has been tricked or deceived or so such that he could not meet these timeline requirements?
Well, practically speaking, yes, but according to the Ohio Putative Father Registry, no. The rules are very clear with regard to the Ohio Putative Father Registry. You're on notice. If you're a guy and you have sex with a woman, you're on notice that a child could result. It's basic fifth grade health class. But
He was on notice, and he had actual notice, and he didn't do what the Ohio Putative Father Registry requires.
Right, you have to register.
He had his opportunity, so, and he didn't qualify as a father. So why isn't that the end of the matter?
Well, the Putative Father Registry, the whole purpose of that is to put putative fathers who do timely register on notice.
You think his rights are more so now because he's biological?
I'm sorry?
Are you saying your client's scenario is different because he's or has been biologically connected to the child?
Yes, his status changed to legal father. He's the biological father. So, yes, we are now looking at a different part of the statute.
But has his status technically changed legally?
Yes, his status was changed with judicial ascertainment of paternity in the Logan County Juvenile Court.
Let me ask it a little differently. You talked about, and I get you on the father's constitutional rights, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But isn't let's call it, instead of 9 months, let's call it 8 months and 15 days, knowledge. Isn't that enough time to give him procedural due process?
According to the putative father registry...
I'm going to the Constitution, which is where you were at.
Well,
isn't that a long enough time? Isn't that fair?
I will submit that this court in 2015 and in NRA H&R, this court specifically questioned the constitutionality of the putative father registry.
I'm asking you.
Yeah.
Is it constitutional? You're invoking the federal constitution.
Yes.
Is it constitutional? Is 8 months and 15 days sufficient procedural due process?
I personally don't believe that the putative father registry is necessarily constitutional, but, Your Honor, that's not what we're here for today.
Well, we know that he didn't register timely.
Correct, and my client isn't asking for any rights through the putative father registry. He's not. That would have entitled him to notice of his right to object. It would have entitled him to an additional notice of his right to pursue a paternity action, and he could have gone out then, as long as he objected timely, he could have gone out then, and had he timely registered, he'd have gotten notice that he could go file a paternity action. We didn't need that. We're not asking for that notice.
So we need to ignore those statutes.
Yes, with regard to the putative father registry, it's not applicable to the inquiry here today.
So where are his rights? Where are your client's rights? Where should we derive those rights here?
Under 310707, the court should, this case should be remanded back to the Van Wert court for the Van Wert court to analyze whether my client's consent was necessary as a father. So that's 310707A.
But wasn't there still a requirement of natural parenthood, that he was the natural legal father prior to the filing of the petition?
So his, are you referring to the juvenile court's finding?
Yes.
Okay, so the juvenile court did find my client to be the biological father, the legal father of the child.
Okay.
Well, and that was prior to the first hearing.
I think what she's asking about, though, is the legal requirements under 3107.06 that says a petition may be granted only if written consent has been executed by all the following: the mother, the father, but only if any of the following apply. And the only one that's applicable, could even possibly applicable here, is that prior to the date the petition was filed, it was determined by a court proceeding pursuant to sections 311.01 to 18, or proceeding in another state, that he has a parent and child relationship with the minor. That's the only thing in that sentence, in that section that could possibly apply, and clearly it doesn't.
I understand that, but this court has said again and again that there is no jurisdictional priority rule.
So it doesn't matter if there's just priority rule. It's not about judicial priority. It's about whether prior to the date the petition was filed, it was determined by a court that he was a father, and that's just not the case.
Well, by that, Your Honor, I mean that there's no requirement that you're the first to file. The facts of Pushkar, of PAC, GV, GTB, in those cases, we had first to file, and the court say, you know, as far as whether the probate court should refrain, the court said that they should refrain. But in none of those cases did this court say it's because it was first filed in the juvenile court that the probate court has to refrain. And specifically in MGBE, this court said there is no first to file rule, and that the probate court must refrain, allow the juvenile parentage action to be complete with regard to the establishment of parentage, and then the probate court could proceed because now it now knows who has who should be here and who should have a right to consent or you know whether they should not be able to consent.
Can the biological father file that 10 years later?
The biological father, under 311.04, a putative father who believes himself to be the biological father, can file a juvenile court or family court action to establish paternity at any time, even after adoption takes place.
Even if the child is now 17?
Yes, they can file it at any time.
Even though the adoption and the putative father had nothing to do with the child, didn't register, nothing.
Yes. The question is, what impact does it have? When we are post-adoption, post-final hearing, it has no impact on the paternity of the child. We can establish paternity for purposes of making sure that child has access to its medical records and things like that. The question here today is, what impact should that judicial ascertainment of paternity have in the adoption prior to the very first hearing?
But after the filing.
But after the filing.
But before the first hearing.
But before the first hearing.
Even though he could have filed.
Even though he could have.
So the putative registry does matter.
The putative father registry does not matter in this case. The putative father registry is still important. I'm not trying to say that the registry isn't important. It is important in situations where we don't have a father coming forward, but that is not the case here.
Well, he didn't come forward in the first 15 days after birth and after 8 months of knowing of the pregnancy.
He did come forward throughout the pregnancy, and in fact, the probate court, the appellants have argued that he should have to prove that he participated in the pregnancy and all of that. That was already proven. The probate court found that my client demonstrated a deep commitment to parenting.
That was found after the filing.
That was found in the hearing at the probate court level.
After the filing. Of the petition.
Yes, yes. At that point in time, he had already been determined to be the legal father, and it was the first adoption hearing.
And again, 310706B3 says unless the biological or legal fatherhood is established by the court prior to the filing of the petition for adoption, the biological parent's consent is not required.
I understand that, but this court has historically construed that statute to not require that the juvenile action be filed first, and as such, we would ask
you. And which case controls that? Which historical case of ours says that?
Thank you, Your Honor. I see I'm over my time. If I can
go
answer
ahead.
The question, thank you. So that starts with In Re Adoption of Pushkar. We go next to PAC and GV, both in 2010. Next to in 2015, H&R. Again in 2016, Allen County versus Mercer County. And the Third District suggested that was a race to judgment rule. I think the issues before the court. They were not deemed to be issues of parentage, so I don't think that that's necessarily what we have. It happens to be the case in our case, but not in general. Okay. And then MGBE in 2018.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel?
Your Honor, and I know I went over time.
You may take a minute.
I will keep this brief. Every one of the cases that she just suggested to you is controlling in this, in all of those cases, the juvenile court proceeding or an MBG, it was a divorce case, or in Pushkar, we're talking about juvenile court cases, divorce cases, and parentage cases, all of which were filed prior to the petition for adoption being filed. So I don't think that controls, and I think we're right on point. We have to identify somebody as legal or putative at the time of the filing of the petition. The probate court has to go forward. Adoptive parents are required to put in that petition whose consent is necessary, whose consent is not necessary, and if not necessary, why? And you check the box, he failed to file with the putative father registry. At that point, notices go out to those who are entitled to notice. Putative fathers aren't if there's a putative father registry that says they didn't register. So the probate court has to be allowed to proceed. In all these other cases, the petition for parentage complaint was filed first, and so the court said, we got to let them go forward and finish that, and we will let the determination of parentage relate back to the filing of the parentage complaint. That's the difference. There isn't any case that says you can go forward with a parentage complaint that was filed afterwards, or we run into the same problem that Esteemed Justice was concerned about. Months later, we're taking children out of homes.
Thank you.
That's why this is the way it is.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision. Marshal, would you adjourn court, please?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.